This is Talent in the Age of AI, the podcast helping leaders navigate what AI means for their people, their culture, and their future. We talk with the thinkers and practitioners shaping how we work, learn, and lead, and what it takes to keep talent growing in a world that's constantly changing. We create, curate, and connect the insights and the community that helps leaders build AI confidence in themselves and in their teams. Let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to the Talent in the Age of AI podcast, where we seek to bring you the latest and greatest and most relevant information on what's going on in talent today, especially with the onslaught of AI, changing lives and changing behaviors and policies and programs. I want to mention that we are produced by What's Good Productions, a fabulous company and a great partner in this. And if you would follow, like, share, we can spread the word to more people in the talent development, HR, executive leadership sphere. And to that end, I'm so excited to present to you today our guest, Larry Durham. He is the president of St. Charles Consulting Group. And in our briefing, we were so excited, and the briefing to prepare is supposed to be a 15-minute, what are we going to talk about together that's relevant for our audience? And I think our briefing was 1 hour long because what Larry's doing is so resonant with me and fellow founders in bringing you talent in the age of AI that he's the perfect guest to add so much value to your thinking today and in the future about infusing AI into your company and for your talent. So therefore, we're going to offer this three-part series with Larry Durham. Very interesting topics. One is what we'll talk about today, and it's called the coming judgment void. And I think Larry and I are wondering, do we actually call it the coming judgment crisis? But he'll get into that today. That's more of a negative, scary word. So we're going to go with void and how to get ahead of that today. And then, by the way, Larry and partners at St. Charles Consulting Group are offering a free book called The Judgment Void that will be made available to members of Talent in the Age of AI, and we're pleased to offer that link to you. And we thank you and your partners for that, Larry. So I've blabbed enough, and without further ado, I just want to introduce you, and we'll talk about The Judgment Void. Thank you for being with us.
Wendy, thank you for having me. I'm excited about this topic. I know a lot of our clients and colleagues are excited about this topic, and I think it's going to be a great three-part series. So good to be with you today.
Well, tell me, you coined that term as far as I know. And more than that, Larry, I think the idea that judgment is what nobody's circling around right now or applying to how do you enhance and adopt AI, judgment is going to be the thing that's missing, therefore the word void or crisis. And I just think it's so insightful that you have identified that, and you're going to talk about some solutions for how to maybe close the void before it's too late, because I know you told me you think there's only a little window here or we're going to be in crisis mode.
Yeah. I don't want to be inflammatory or sensational, but I think, you know, one thing that I find in HR, talent, and learning, you know, sometimes we forget to step back and say, well, what's going on with the work? What's the organization trying to do? What's the work to be had? And then how do people support that work? And one thing that's happened with AI that really brings judgment into the forefront is that virtually every organization we work with, and even the ones that we don't, but we've seen it with the organizations we're working with, is that they say, you know what, AI is really good at doing certain types of things, right? And so early career work, we're taking up to half, at least this year, many of the firms are taking up to half of that work and having AI do the work. Now, on its face, that sounds very exciting. Well, frightening and exciting. So they're hiring fewer people. They're using AI to do the work. But what you start to see is, even though as L&D and HR, we develop individuals as part of these programmatic trainings that we do, the cognitive and the judgment formation begins in that early stage work. And so I think that's where we first stumbled upon this was, if AI is doing the early career work, how does judgment begin to form? It's not that we can just say, hey, we have a 2-hour course and judgment will be here. It's that the formation of judgment and the development of that often happen through the work. And we first saw this with some of the big firms. Our biggest clients are the big four firms. And some came to us and said, hey, we want to recreate apprenticeship because it seems to be going away, but it worked really well. And what they didn't realize they were saying was, we had a mechanism where the work actually did some of the lifting and the training, and it was quote unquote free. There was no incremental cost, where I could observe others, I could do the work, I could form judgment, but all of a sudden we're at a point where half of the work that early career people are doing going to AI, we've got what we're calling a formation debt or a judgment debt, where there's a gap of efficiency we've gained, but all this judgment is void, i.e. the judgment void. And now we're going to have a gap that somehow we have to fill. And so that was the premise of how we went down this path.
So we've kind of inadvertently left judgment out of the training or processes because we're letting AI solve some things.
That's exactly right. I've heard a number of individuals, experts on the topic, talk about how judgment is not forming. A lot of the clients we serve are in regulated environments, right? So it's not just, hey, judgment's a good thing to have. It is that they have professional judgment requirements. In fact, if you took everything else away, if there was only one thing you could have, professional judgment is the thing that the regulators demand. So you've got work that's taking it away in early career. You've got regulators saying, hey, you can use AI, but you have to demonstrate how judgment is forming. And now we're going to ask that you show us that. And a lot of our clients are saying, how would we go about doing that? We never had to do it before. It was free. It was unseen. Now it has to be deliberate. It has to be formed. It may cost us something. And that's really problematic because it's showing that there's something there. So this isn't just a leadership topic or anything else like that. One last thing I'll say here is that one of our clients said 40% of first year work is going away. Next year, it will probably be 50%. We expect it to top out somewhere in the 70 to 80% of the work that early career individuals do will go away. Can you imagine taking someone straight out of college and putting them into a job where they only get 20% of the exposure? What's that development going to look like? And I know we'll talk about that in subsequent episodes, but when you think about it, how's the judgment going to form if you've never applied it before? You've never set foot into that space to make what those judgments look like or even observed other people making those judgments. So it's a real challenge for us.
Yeah, I think early in my career, I learned more by just sitting with my boss's boss, and listening to how they had conversations and hearing what came out of their mouths by what they were able to glean from what they were hearing and apply their experience and their judgment. And those with judgment are the ones that succeed and are promoted in the workplace, but also have more confidence and fulfillment. You know what, Larry, you've identified a problem and you shared with me the quote from Einstein. When, you know, sometimes we don't know what we don't know, and we don't worry. We're just handed a problem and nobody in the room thinks, hold on a minute, is this the problem? And what was that quote you shared?
Yeah, it's come across in a few variations, but the one that most people refer to is, you know, Einstein said if the world was going to end in an hour, he would spend 55 minutes framing the problem and 5 minutes solving it. And I think from our perspective, that feels very accurate. We've been fanatical about framing what this problem is. And there's two things. We're not advocating against AI. We think AI is a life-changing thing for organizations. But what we are saying is, as you use AI, you have to recognize that this work that early career individuals do can't just go away. In fact, we even have some clients that used to use what they called a pyramid structure, right? So you had your largest group at the bottom, you know, your entry level, and that was the base of the pyramid. And then it got a little smaller, a little smaller, a little smaller. So that by the time they got to the highest level, it was small. And all of a sudden they said, hey, we're not going to be a pyramid anymore. We're going to be maybe a diamond. I don't know if they know how much that impacts everything about their business, right? First of all, how do you grow this intersection, right? How do you grow the middle part to be as big as it needs to be if you've got no base? How
right. do you? You're starting with a pinpoint. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And even if it were a pentagon, right? Something like that. How does that even work? And what they've done is they have articulated the problem without even going deeper into what that actually meant when it was said. As soon as you say that, what you've done is you've curtailed the judgment formation in early career that's going to show up probably, we've estimated, in about 2 to 3 years in some industries, because that formative judgment's not being replaced. They don't have first line of sight to it. And one other thing I'll say, Wendy, is from an HR and an L&D perspective, we've often said there's four areas that we look at: declarative knowledge, procedural skill or task, judgment formation, and relational skill. So those are the four things. Now, interestingly enough, the other problem is a lot of that relational and judgment happens on the job. Maybe 15% of L&D offerings are in that space. 80 to 85% is in declarative knowledge and procedural task or skills. And lo and behold, what's AI taking? If it can be procedural, if it's declarative knowledge and procedural task, AI is really good at that. And here we are as L&D training 85% of our programmatic training on that. So the problem is we're training and deploying resources for a bygone era. We would say bygone era for 10, 20 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, but we're training and deploying people for a bygone era from 2 years ago.
Yeah, I just read that jobs that are safe from AI are engineering, and that I don't remember the source, but that seems a little antithesis to what you just said, because engineering is a lot of procedural knowledge, rote knowledge, and formulas, et cetera. So,
yeah,
right.
I think what might be being said there. We work a lot. We work in the accounting, the consulting, the tax, the legal. We move over into healthcare. Like I said, we work in a lot of regulated environments, but it applies across. The thing that scares me the most when, you know, it's been said for a few years now, AI can't take my job. I always take pause when someone says that, because I don't believe that's true. I think the engineering comment is probably a different skill comment. Being a systems thinker, engineers are very good in terms of a systems thinker, not a technology, but a broad systems thinking, how things work together, what happens upstream, what happens downstream, how does this fit together?
Okay.
And even for knowledge workers, we're starting to say, well, what does a solution engineer look like in an AI environment? What we're saying is, what's the ecosystem of what you do? Who are you serving? And as I said before, I think the first step for knowledge environments is to step back and say, what's the work that's going to be done in the future? What's the work architecture? What does that mean for the worker? Where's the AI and human in the loop? And then what does that mean for the developmental skills and what has to happen for the individuals? I think that systems thinking is important. And I said one thing a while back. I was meeting with a chief learning officer who we meet with often. And they said, what do you think the future of L&D looks like if indeed declarative knowledge and procedural task is most of what we do, but it's no longer most of what they're going to need in the future? And I said, I think the ADDIE model that we all know and love, if we've been around for any time at all, and I've been in the space 30 plus years, the ADDIE model was almost a bell curve, right? Assess and evaluate on the ends was low compared to design and development. That's where we spent most of the time. I think the bell curve gets inverted so that most of our time is going to be assessing what's the work, what do people need to know and do, how do they use AI. Designing and developing is largely what agents and agent swarms would do to develop that, strangely enough, and then evaluating the performance and the capability orchestration. So the AI or the ADDIE curve is actually an inverted bell curve to really rethink. So to your point, everyone's in engineering as a systems thinker, but I don't know that there's going to be any job that's going to look very, very similar to what it does today.
Once again, your visionary insight is amazing. I want to stop and pause here for an ad, and By the way, it's going to be an ad for the St. Charles Consulting Group, which we're happy to do. So please stand by, everyone. We will be right back. Listeners, watchers of the Talent in the Age of AI podcast, I'm so pleased to tell you more about the St. Charles Consulting Group. Their mission is to help employees navigate change and experience success by delivering comprehensive talent development solutions that focus on, quote, preparing your people for your tomorrow. And you'll see from listening to our three-part series with President Larry Durham that this is exactly what they do. And they're not resting on laurels or doing what happened in the past. They are big, visionary future thinkers. So they help mid to large size organizations maximize the value of their talent. And who doesn't want that? That's why we're all here together. Through strategic consulting, innovative learning solutions, and managed services. The roots are in real-world, renowned Anderson Worldwide Training and Development Center located in St. Charles, Illinois. So they come at this from 30-plus years of deep experience, real-world, boots-on-the-ground training, consulting, thinking about what's next, and identifying the real problems to be solved through human talent interventions. For our podcast report series is President Larry Durham, and I'm so pleased to have stopped for a pause to let you know more about this incredible company available at stccg.com. stccg.com, as in the St. Charles Consulting Group. And now we'll go back to our interview with President Larry Durham. We're back with President of St. Charles Consulting Group, Larry Durham, who has a depth of knowledge and experience. And more than that, he has a supervision. His glasses that he's wearing look normal now, but they're actually not. I'm convinced that I'm going to go to his house and steal his glasses because I want to see into the future as he is able to do. We've talked about some people don't even know what they don't know. And I think a lot of companies out there aren't even imagining the gaps that'll happen. I think we have the myth story that AI will replace all humans, the myth story that AI is gonna, it's not, and the truth that AI will take a lot of procedural jobs, entry-level jobs, et cetera, and it very well may. But I think what Larry and his partners have uncovered here is that the lack of judgment that will be missing in an opportunity in a role. I think we can all think back to our first few jobs where we were learning how to discern how to be better at our jobs, what was expected of us, the nuanced information that may not have been said but was being relayed. And so how do you teach judgment? Nobody's teaching it in college, Larry, and even if they were, two courses on it wouldn't be it. You know, it's like teaching empathy or something. It's learned and experiential. And so I know you have part of our title here is the coming judgment void and how to get ahead of it today. So in the second part of this podcast, what are your suggestions to our viewers out there for how to get ahead of that judgment void that is coming? And you're saying 2 to 3 years, which maybe that does make it a crisis if we don't get ahead of it now.
Yeah. If one thing I would say, happy to answer that question. There's one thing I would say, even the subtitle of the book, right? It's AI is eroding the one thing that it can't replace. And I think sometimes our poor judgment somehow lulls us into thinking that AI is going to get so sophisticated that it will have judgment. And so this really isn't a crisis. This is a temporary thing. In fact, I'm a technophile. I love to use AI. I follow all the AI stocks, and they like to talk about inference, AI inference, right? The ability to infer things. And people say, well, that kind of sounds like judgment, right? So maybe over time. Here's what's interesting. AI is a probabilistic model. It has a natural language system on the front end. And the part that's dangerous can be dangerous about it is it's so good at articulating what it comes up with that it sounds highly believable, right? And it is probable that it is correct, but it's highly believable. And what starts to happen, we did some research. An old friend of mine used to lead training for one of the largest airlines in the world. And I was talking to him about judgment formation and doing simulations and what that's like. And he said, you know, we've been doing this for quite some time because the consequences are high, right? So the consequences are high if a pilot doesn't know how to do what they need to do. But when you start looking at it, the issue is, even if you can simulate that, someone knows that they're in a simulator. And once they get into the real thing, they have to know what that judgment is. And the only time that's ever going to happen is that they get into that. So all I'm saying is judgment, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would say 5 years from now, if I said, will AI be better at judgment? The answer is no. Its inference actually makes our judgment even more important going forward. So where we're at today is not going to diminish on judgment. It's only going to get more sophisticated and more required, either regulatorily, from a business perspective, from a human perspective. All those things are very, very necessary. Your question about, so what do we do today? Step one is to even acknowledge it. One thing we talk about in the book, most organizations haven't even realized this. They're excited about what AI is doing in early career. And what they're doing is they're saying, look, we're becoming more efficient. Our margins are getting better. And so what they're seeing is on their P&L, they're getting a boost on their bottom line. We're being more efficient. We're making more money using AI. Success. What they're not, there's no accounting for a judgment void. And I know that sounds odd, but not that you're going to see a line item for judgment void. But on the balance sheet, there's no debt. Given something up, they've captured, organizations are capturing the efficiency of AI, but they're not calculating the void that's forming. And the reason that I say 2 to 3 years, and some of the organizations we work with, we've actually plotted out in great detail what types of judgment form year over year over year within the career ladder, which I know we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
What judgments form and when? And so the reason in some areas we say in year three is a crisis is because last year the hiring started to change. Young career, early career, college graduates couldn't find, you probably know someone who graduated college who's still looking for a job. It's because they quit hiring as many people because AI was doing the work. What we're seeing is we know in about 2 to 3 years, they're going to have to promote people into roles that haven't had the formative experience to begin to form that judgment. And we've plotted judgment over a 6-year window, when it forms, what has to form, what it begins to look like. And the really difficult part, Wendy, is that you can simulate experiences, but it's not like our traditional training. You know, I don't go through a simulation and say, Wendy, is it A, B, C, or D? It's the heuristics of how you make decisions where you have to say what you're going to do before we even demonstrate, because otherwise I'm just answering a question. I'm not stimulating the brain to make a struggle or a decision based on uncertain information. I'm actually having to go through a process where I'm developing judgment, which is a much different process. And you say, well, we never did that before. That's because that was happening in an unstructured way in early career work. And then you were getting developmental feedback. And so the mechanisms were there, but now that we've taken it away, we haven't backfilled for it. And so that's one of the issues that we need to start thinking about as an organization is how to backfill that.
I think to your point, we did do it before, but it was just baked in to our experiences. I can't stop but think about Sully Sullenberger when you talk about simulation. Mm-hmm. He was prepared and he had all the information. But the reality of saying, I've got to set this plane down on the Hudson or which of those rivers, the East River, you know, it took a lot of judgment, personal judgment.
Yeah.
And luckily,
I think about that movie, right? I think it was entitled Miracle on the Hudson, right? Hopefully we won't need a miracle in our judgment. But I think that's quite interesting because one thing we have found and we're piloting right now is, one, acknowledging it, that this is the stage that most organizations are in. Two, how do we begin to recreate it so that judgment can form? And that's two. And then three is actually quite an interesting one, which is we can't condense it, but we do think we can accelerate the judgment formation. So if we go to the edge of individually, everyone loves talking about personalized learning. If we go to the edge of where you do work well and how you're forming judgments, we do believe we can see modest acceleration of judgment formation. So not only can we identify it and replace it, we think we can accelerate it to some degree. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow us to, I'm going to use the word recreate opportunities for people to form judgment in a place where we didn't have to do it before. And part of this is going to likely be funded or, you know, sourced by taking some of the dividends of the AI efficiency that we had. Most organizations just don't realize they're going to have to reinvest some of those dividends from AI efficiency back into judgment formation. Otherwise, they're going to have a void and a crisis or whatever catastrophe, whatever we want to call it, here in about 2 to 3 years, especially in a regulated environment. Because here's the thing, AI does, we work a lot with audit organizations, some of the biggest in the world. AI can do it perfectly well, taking the data, the knowledge, the procedures. But if we look at most of the issues that big firms have, almost 2/3 of the issues that they've had that are cited by the regulator are poor judgment. Now, this was before, right? This was before the judgment. So now all of a sudden AI is doing it and I don't know how to discern it. Now the question is, what's that number going to look like? That's the crisis that that industry might have. And I suspect many of the others will have something quite similar.
Yeah. I mean, it's always come down to one person makes a bad or a company fatal error. And it can really affect stock value. It can affect reputation, brand. I'm a marketer by trade. I mean, it did get down to one person leading in the direction or saying yes or no to an idea brought forth. So when we take that out of the equation, what are we relying on? And what are you going to turn to in a court of law if it goes there? Well, AI told me this was okay. I mean, you're not going to be able to do that.
And don't get me wrong. You know, sometimes people say, yeah, you're right. Judgment. You can't trust everything AI says. I think they're using it somewhat in a very elementary way. Like 1 + 1 = 3. You should have caught that. Judgment is quite sophisticated, right? People say, oh, you're talking about problem solving. And the answer is no, it's not problem solving. It's not critical thinking. It's problem assessment when it's not even clear that there is a problem there. There's a feeling, there's an intuition that something doesn't look right here, right? Everything I know, something's not right. And that professional judgment has to kick in. And that is something that has to be developed. I can go to 100 hours worth of college courses, and that's not going to develop based on any amount of education I receive.
No, not at all. And we've all worked with people like that. And that's why you like, you know, I'm really into Emergenetics, Myers-Briggs, all that stuff. You like a whole brain on your team because not everybody thinks the same. And some people are better at judgment. Others are better at providing the facts. And maybe that's who will win in this AI structure of everybody's going to lose their jobs. I think what you're saying is it's those who still practice, deploy their own judgment based on good information will be the winners.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you go upstream, right, a lot of times I came from the L&D world. So many times we're taking the material that we have, the people that we have without commoditizing them. We take the people that we have and we develop them fit for purpose for what the business needs. I think you've gone upstream to say, can you tell what good judgment looks like? It's interesting. The studies show that judgment is not innate. Maybe Larry has more or less common sense on certain things, but judgment is not innate. You know, some people don't just have great judgment and others have poor judgment. It's developable in each of these areas. One other thing I'll say, and we'll probably talk about this later, that relational component, you know, I don't want a listener to think that the only thing that's important in the future with AI for workers is judgment formation. You still need knowledge. You still need procedural skills. And you really need relational. While, interestingly enough, of those four things, we entitled the book that it's the one thing that AI can't do well. AI can actually do relational better than it can do judgment. And that's probably a book unto itself. But if you think about that for a moment, every year for the last 3 years, I've looked at what the use cases are for AI. And last year, you know, in year one, it was, write a paper for me or draft an email. Last year, the top use case in the top 10 was self-help and guidance, right? So the relational aspect that we thought, will people ever trust AI to give, you know, dating advice or career guidance or all these things? We're already there. And so I do think relational is critically important. AI can do it slightly better than judgment, but relational and judgment formation are the two things that we're probably going to spend more of our time on than the procedural task and the declarative knowledge aspects.
Yeah, there may be a little more of a shill or something you should protect yourself from when you believe that AI is your counselor or your best friend or your partner in life. And I know there's a growing trend where that's where people are solving loneliness. And I am very effusive in thanking my ChatGPT for helping me and tell it it's amazing. And it tells me I'm amazing back. And I believe it because, you know, I want to be flattered. But I think, again, I think you've hit on something very important. And I know that companies can come to your company for advice and help. But what else should they, what else could somebody do tomorrow to start to grease the skids for enhancing judgment among the talent today that maybe they're allowing AI use and they put parameters around it, but they haven't thought about the judgment factor? What are there any bits of advice you could give?
It's similar to what I said before. And, you know, you may have to unpack this a little bit within each organization, depending on what it is that they're doing. But I do think the first step, again, whether you're in HR or you're in talent or you're in L&D, one thing that I'm finding, this will be my precursor to my answer. And that is what I'm finding is that the talent groups and organizations are all of a sudden finding themselves much closer together. You know, before somehow the L&D group didn't work very closely with the talent acquisition group.
Right.
It was almost out of necessity. And all of a sudden they're bumping into each other all over the place. And it's like, what kind of skills do we need to hire in the future? And who's going to thrive in this environment? And what do we need to develop people on? And what do they need training on? And, you know, what's the performance management process? I think all of that is starting to shift. And so it's making, in fact, one of my clients calls it a talent consortium, right? It's this cadre of three or four talent groups that didn't work together before, which is actually more surprising than not that they didn't.
Yeah.
And they're starting to come together. And I think what's happening there, a few of the lessons learned there is instead of thinking about what we're going to produce as a talent consortium for our people, what work with the business to understand what is the work that people will do, what are the efficiencies of it, and what are we losing? I think there's a really interesting thing I've said to some of my L&D counterparts, and this goes for HR as well, but for L&D, there are two main things at the core going forward. One is capability orchestration, and the other is judgment verification. And that sounds really odd, right? Because there's a lot of questions like, do all the talent functions still exist in the future? Like, do we need all these groups? Couldn't everything be distributed? And maybe it doesn't sit in HR. I think the real question is, if you're bringing value to the business, you don't have to worry about your existence. But I do think capability orchestration, what is the business, what kind of work do they do, and what do the people need to do in conjunction with AI agents to be successful? And how do we promote that and develop that? The other side is this judgment piece, which will start to form, which is, are we eroding judgment unknowingly? And how do we make sure that we don't let that happen? And we can obviously talk through what that begins to look like, because it is kind of a new problem to solve. Going back to that 55 minutes of framing the problem, going back to frame what that problem is. But I would say, don't think about what programs you're going to develop next year or what kind of people you need. What's the kind of work and what's the future 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years out? And what's that going to look like? Because then, you know, you can overlay the knowledge, the skills, the judgment formation, and the relational aspects and see, but don't think that the model that we have today is going to work because the work has changed. And if the work has changed, there's no way that HR and talent acquisition and everything else can't change. It has to change with it. And judgment's kind of maybe the biggest one that we see changing that's forcing that.
Again, I just think it's so insightful. So everything has changed, right? I always said COVID changed everything, but then you pile on AI on top of it, everything has changed. And back to your point, we have these huge organizations, and I respect them greatly, and SHRM and ATD and Better Work Media, but they're so separate silos. And what you're suggesting is, you know, what's happening and what should be happening is talent development and HR join hands and decide what we need. And that's going to be the topic of part three, in a way, of our series. So I'm so thankful, and I know that you have questions and comments, and we're going to tee up Larry Durham, the president of St. Charles Consulting Group, with this great vision about the void of judgment that's happening, that's coming. It's coming. It's barreling down the path. And then we're going to tee up Larry to host a webinar where you can ask more interactive questions and even sidebar conversation with him about what's it mean for your organization as we get more and more pressure from the C-suite to do something about talent in the age of AI. Larry, I can't thank you enough for being with us. I look forward to parts two and three. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks for listening to Talent in the Age of AI. If this conversation gave you new ways to grow in your own work and to better support your people, follow the show and share it with others in your HR and talent network. Members get even more. Full episode transcripts, extended show notes, and companion resources to help you put these insights into action. Learn more and join us at talentintheageofai.com. We're here to help leaders create, curate, and connect what's needed to build tomorrow's workforce today. See you next time.